Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And I'm going to turn up the headphones so that I don't feel like I have to shout.
Good.
I don't like when Joe Buck shouts at me. So I don't want to shout at our listeners here in Bedford. So today it snowed.
Sure did.
I was not expecting to walk out. For some reason, I blanked it out entirely. Like, we played basketball last night, picked up a win, which was fun. And I hadn't played basketball since June at all.
Since the championship game?
Since the championship. And yeah, I mean, I only played the second half of that anyway. But
funny that wasn't the NBA, even though the championship was in June.
So that's what, 5.5 months of really, I probably have touched a basketball 3 times, which really isn't recommended. And then that coupled with shoveling snow, and I've come to a realization.
I ain't as good as I once was.
Toby Keith.
I ain't as good as I once was.
At basketball or shoveling?
I'm just saying that the years kind of add up. And so, like, I'm feeling every minute of my 45 years this morning. And, so I ain't as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was.
Good once as I ever was.
I don't think I ever saw that video until just now either.
I haven't either, but that's a nice touch. That's nice addition to our intro.
I like the production PC, too, the fact that I can pipe that in. So, I mean, we could really play whatever we want now. We could use it like a soundboard.
Wow, we go to a whole new level.
I mean, seriously, we could be like Jim Healy. Ooh, nobody knows who that is here. Jim Healy was, I don't remember on what station out in California. Somebody is listening and will hopefully understand. But he was like the first guy to throw in a sound effect after a sound effect after a sound effect. And it was just really cleverly done. But he had the same sort of things. And I'm willing to bet somebody has put together somewhere a Jim Healy soundboard of things like Who Goofed, I've Got to Know. But, I mean, that was like old school sports talk. But when I hear that Toby Keith song, it reminds me of something.
Okay.
Which is a bus trip to Winnipeg. And you might have played with this guy, oddly enough. Did you ever play with a right-handed pitcher named Joe Goodman?
No.
Okay. Joe Goodman didn't throw terribly hard, like a mid-80s guy. I don't think his ball really moved all that much. He had had good success down in that league in Texas that you played in.
The Central League.
Central League. There you go. If you should have seen my hand gesture.
Was he a righty or lefty?
He was a righty. Had good success there. Came to the Northern League to us and was constantly getting into it with our manager, Dirty Al, and who I'm told is now in Duluth, Minnesota. But so he was constantly getting into it with Dirty Al. Joe was always, you need to show him my stats. I need to be getting in more games.
Like, he was telling you to do that?
Yeah, I'm the broadcaster.
slash agent?
Yeah, why am I doing this? And at one point I said something to Al because Joe was a friend of mine, and Al says, you need to go back through and look at his inherited runners. A la Mark Madsen, or Ryan, not Mark Madsen, Ryan Madsen.
Right.
not the forward who can't dance.
Yeah, that can be deceptive.
Yeah, and sure enough, Joe Goodman's inherited runners were atrocious. Not Madsen-esque, but bad. But the song reminds me of Joe because we were going from Kansas City to Winnipeg. It was one of those 14-hour bus trips, and he was playing cards in the seat across the aisle just to the right of me. That song was popular at that point, so it was probably 12 or 13 years ago, and he literally sang that song for 14 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, 14 hours of Joe Goodman singing I Ain't As Good As I Once Was. So that brings me to my question. What is your longest bus trip?
Well, it probably was, I don't know if I ever did 14. I'm going to say 12.
Which was what to where?
That would have been West Texas, San Angelo.
Okay.
Which is in West Central Texas, way over about 2 hours south of Lubbock, just in no man's land.
Right. If you're using Lubbock as the point of reference, yeah, you're really close to nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. So from there, I mean, you got to go like 4 hours east just to get to San Antonio.
Okay.
So you're not even close to the border. To
right.
get across. So then it would have been from there to Jackson, Mississippi, I think.
Hey, okay, so that's a bad one. We had the Kansas City to Winnipeg, which was basically a straight shot up I-29. And the misery that goes along with the long bus trips is the fact that you are literally driving through nowhere. And it's cool to see places, but eventually, like, if you're driving through North Dakota, there's not a whole lot. Or if you're driving from like Calgary to Edmonton, like there's a lot of prairie up there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it helps if you're, you know, if, like me, if you have roots in Kansas and you're used to driving through hours and hours of cornfields and you're okay with it.
Right.
And I don't know if I've mentioned before, but that last year that I was playing, I drove in 42 states.
Seriously?
Yeah, just to get from winter training to spring training.
Have you been to all 50?
I have 47.
Okay. You're missing Alaska
and Hawaii and North Dakota.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't get North Dakota?
Yeah,
in Sioux Falls.
I know. I may have. I'm just not sure, so I can't count it.
Huh?
Yeah.
How could you not be sure?
Well, you know,
it's unmistakable.
Is it?
No. Yeah, that's the point.
Right.
Precisely.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a decent chance I drove there, but. But yeah, I think it helps with the road trips if you're into that sort of thing. But that really does add an element of fun to the minor league baseball experience.
Right.
Because it becomes an adventure where you have these 14-hour trips. You got to figure out something to do. Ideally, you don't have somebody singing in your ear for 14 hours straight.
Well,
and ideally, you know.
It was Joe, and I kept like side eye, and then you're like, dude, really? Why are we doing this? Yeah.
And then ideally, you don't, you know, break down in the bus and not have AC in the southern part of the U.S. when it's 95 in the summer, like it may have happened to us.
Right. Well, that happens. Or I don't remember. It was like Wentzville, Missouri or something like that, where the middle of the night and the bus just breaks down and you're at the mercy of the bus company to send you another bus and you're on the side of the road. And this was before the days of iPhones, where you would have had your phone and been communicating with everybody via text and social media and live streaming and whatever. Like then it was, you just, okay, we know we're not going to get on this bus. So you get your luggage and you sit on your luggage on the side of the road and wait for your next bus. And you really have no idea. And then you pull in and it's 10 in the morning and the game's at 7 that night. And all right, there's no BP, show and go.
It's like a rite of passage, I guess.
Yes.
To have this bus breakdown. And then, as you say, get in at 10 a.m. and then it's, okay, try and get 3 hours sleep in the hotel bed, get a little food, then get to the ballpark and try and pull yourself together for a first pitch.
Yeah, it's always interesting to deal with that. And then the other circumstance that enters in is this weird thing where you're not in control. Like, if you're on a road trip, and you go, God, there's a Waffle House. That's great. You stop. Or if it's music playing and you like the music, you can leave it on the channel. Or if the music's playing and you don't like the music, you change the channel.
Right. You're talking about a solo road trip.
Right.
Or a small group
road trip is easy. But when you get on a road trip and you're on a bus with, I'm just going to say, 30 people, and some people think, hey, this is going to be a really good movie to watch. First of all, there's the gamble of, I'm throwing the movie in the DVD player or the VCR, as it were back then. Now, if the movie stinks, everybody's going to be all over me for the movie,
right,
for my movie choice. So do I make the movie choice and deal with the fact that somebody might be chirping at me about it, or do I just watch whatever they watch? And I think it was 2005 or 2006, we watched Napoleon Dynamite, I think, every road trip.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. It was just one of those, like, people just kept putting it in Team America World Police. But you get exposed to a lot of stuff you might not ordinarily watch. Fight Club, I think we watched on the regular. And then there's just the, okay, we're pulling over because the busie is about to pass out. And we're somewhere where there's really nothing. Like, there's a convenience store, and he wants to walk in and get a shower or take care of his business. And now we're just going to wait here for 45 minutes in this place where there's nothing I can walk to. Like, I'm stuck.
Yeah, I mean, usually it would be a situation where you would strategize and pull over in an area where there were two or three restaurants within walking distance.
Yes.
But you're out of luck if you end up at a place where all you have is one convenience store.
Right, exactly. You're kind of at the mercy of it. I actually one year wound up, the first year I did it, I wound up losing a good amount of weight because of eating like complete garbage throughout the summer. And yeah, nothing to write home about. So yeah, I was just curious. So that My soreness got me thinking of Joe Goodman and the Northern League, even the South Atlantic League, and Grant will be there next year, Grant Levine. He's kind of in the middle geographically of that league. So they go down Georgia, they go up into Maryland and New Jersey. But where we were in Maryland, we had 12 hours to get down to Georgia. But if it's broken up by a something, you're fine.
Well, that's the other thing when you talk about the bus rides and the soreness is lots of times you'd be trying to sleep on the bus on these overnight bus trips. So you'd have to strategize about sleeping across the aisle on the floor, sleeping across the aisle on the seats, trying to put something in the middle so that you have a quasi bed.
Yeah. Well, as our catcher Matt Seriani used to describe it, it was sleep, not rest. Like, you're sleeping, but you're not resting. And my preferred mode was, okay, if I knew that it was a Sunday night game, and the last year in Kansas City, we had a good amount of Sunday night games, and we were, in a lot of cases, coming back. Like, the closest team was 7 hours away at that point. So we'd come back on Sunday night, you'd play on Monday. And I knew full well that I was going to get back into the ballpark at, let's say, 7, 8 in the morning, go home, literally drive home half an hour, sleep for an hour, and then my phone would start ringing because somebody needed something. Because there was a game that night, we had a promotion going, there was like something that would always happen, and I just couldn't sleep. So my best course of action was to knock myself out like I was B.A. Baracus from the A-team and knock myself out on the bus with Tylenol PM and liquid elixir from Applebee's that served in a very large glass, and wake up in the morning right when we were pulling into Kansas City, because that was my only chance of any sort of mental acuity the next day.
That's funny. The first place I ever tried Tylenol PM was on one of these bus rides, and it was amazing. It was incredible. So that was the perfect medicine for that situation.
Yeah, it's sometimes you just need to get on the bus and knock yourself out, I guess, as it were. So, all right, thinking about the world of sports, football. You and Harry are going out to Durham. So we're recording this on Friday. You and Harry are going out to Durham Saturday, which is today if you're listening on Saturday, yesterday if you're listening on Sunday. it's always weird. But finals matchup, I know you've been doing a little bit of homework. What's your research so far?
Well, it's going to be the 11-0 Bulldogs against 9-2 Pinkerton. And interesting numbers from the semifinal games was that Bedford won 30-8 and Pinkerton won 30-7. And Pinkerton did their damage on the ground. Gannon Fast had 2 touchdown runs, 40 yards and 16 yards. And he also recovered a blocked punt in the end zone. Another running back, Nick Lombard, had a 48-yard run, and then Gennaro Mara had a 10-yard score. So they're obviously thriving on the ground.
Right.
And one thing I've noticed as I've watched the Bulldogs this year is they've been great against the run. So I think that'll be a fun matchup to see. And for those who want to listen in, the broadcast will start at 6 right here on Bedford 105.1. And due to the agreements between the NHIAA and the NFHS, we don't get to broadcast it live.
What about the FBI, CIA? Are they involved in this? The NSA, TSA?
Are
you allowed to carry anything over 3 ounces?
All of those groups signed off on us doing it by radio.
Okay, good.
All right.
I mean, it should be able to.
Yeah.
So on Bedford's end, you also saw the semifinal against Merrimack. What are the Bulldogs? I mean, it's been a multifaceted team so far where we've seen them thriving through the air. You have Morgan Amumpini that's been a really good recipe for them. But on the ground, they've also had Toscano. They've used the little jet sweeps with Lucian Mumpini. So it seems like there are no shortage of weapons with that team either.
Yeah, they've had a great varied offensive attack, and in the semifinal game against Merrimack, it was a lot through the air. Morgan had 3 touchdown passes in the first half, And he,
I wish I had him on my fantasy team.
Seriously, he finished, by my count, 14 of 23 for 166 yards and three touchdowns. He also ran in a fourth score. And then Matty Lucantoni had a 27-yard field goal in the fourth quarter to cap off Bedford scoring. So the three touchdown passes he threw were to Mumpini, who you mentioned. Leguillon had a 20-yard score. And then Toscano had a 43-yard reception right down the middle of the field. And, you know, that's the – hopefully that'll be the difference for Bedford, is the fact that they are that successful through the air. And you mentioned the ground game. So hopefully that offensive versatility will pay off later today.
Right. And also considering the mentality and background of the team, when we talked to Coach Stank a few weeks back, he is a trenches guy. He's an O-line, D-line guy. He loves his big guys down in the middle, and he's very in tune with technique and very in tune with stopping the run. And you would have to figure that that will be a recipe for success on Saturday as the Bulldogs take on Pinkerton out at Wildcat Stadium in Durham at 6 p.m. So, and like Hanson said, that'll be on right here, Bedford 105.1. Harry and the Hansons. Yeah. So should be a good game. Looking forward to that one. And then on the younger side of things, kickoff is Sunday morning at 10 a.m. if you're listening. You can head on down to Stello Stadium in Nashua. The 10U Bedford Bulldogs will be playing in the New England Regional Championship game, taking on the Worcester Vikings.
Wow.
Yeah.
Across state lines.
They went down to Connecticut and beat somebody. I'm not entirely certain who. All I got were the texts that said, hey, we won. We're playing next week in Stellos. So I do not know who they beat to get the win. However, it doesn't really matter. They got the win. And now they're playing at 10 a.m. for the regional championship. They win that. Then they have to figure out how to get down to Florida in December, which is a good problem to have. But it's not inexpensive.
No, it can't be.
Kind of peak season.
So what are they call that, the national championship?
They refer to that as the national championship. I don't know really a whole lot about it other than what I've been told, in, you know, which is to say not much. But, you know, it will be interesting to see. I mean, they have a good team. They haven't lost in two seasons. And they have the real advantage of playing at home on Sunday morning. For all intents and purposes, it's 20 minutes away. It's easier for, it's not terribly far from Worcester to Stellos. But for us, I mean, it really couldn't be easier to get down there and watch that game.
Right. But from what I'm wondering now is, if they haven't lost in 2 years, why is it that they had to go on the road to Connecticut to win one of these playoff games?
It's like hosting the Olympics. You have to bribe the IOC in order to get the rights to host these games.
Huh. So I guess they lost the semifinal round, but by winning the game, they got the championship basically in home field advantage.
Right.
More or less.
And I don't know. I don't know if Stellos outbid somebody for the rights to host this game, but it should be good. So 10 a.m. down at Stellos Stadium. Good luck to the 10U Bedford Bulldogs as they take on the Worcester Vikings. That's just fun to say. We're alliterative. I don't know how they got Worcester Vikings out of it. But I like it. I like their insignia. It's a W and a V with the Viking horns. Very rare, and Bill Jennings is like licking his chops now because I'm saying, oh yeah, this would be great if the show was aired somehow on TV, because you could see me doing the Worcester Viking thing with my hands over my head, man. So, yeah, but good luck to them. 10 a.m. on Sunday at Stellos Stadium. You want to take a quick break and come right back and talk about matters of national importance?
Let's do it.
Or at least to us. Taking a quick break, and we'll be back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and it's the NBA season. And again, I'm reminded that the NBA is, in terms of its theatrics and soap opera nature, better than anything else.
It is. It really is.
It's crazy. Like, and I don't know how this all happened, but it became this weird organic thing where there's like storylines and drama throughout the season. And but it's not like bad drama.
Unless you're in Golden State, it's kind of trending towards negative drama.
What was Steve Kerr's line? He had a really good line.
He always has good lines.
It was physically we're fine, spiritually. He was talking about the Draymond and Kevin Durant thing. They'll be fine. And I don't know. I like both of them, but if somebody was making me choose, I would be Team Draymond.
If you could have one player or just one guy that you like better?
No, the one that I would side with in the argument.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Tough to side with him on this one.
So
why would you side with him on this one?
I'm going to let you tell me why you'd side with Kevin Durant first.
All right, well, let me set the stage for the folks who maybe missed it. It was a game earlier this week, and Golden State made a great comeback, and they got a rebound with about 5.5, 6 seconds left. Draymond sort of aggressively went to get the rebound right next to Durant, and then Draymond started pushing the ball up the right side of the court. Kevin Durant was clapping in the middle of the court, saying, "Give it back to me. I want to come up and take the last shot." Draymond kept the ball, dribbled into traffic, stumbled, lost the ball. Time expires. They don't even get a shot off. Game goes to overtime. And then in the huddle, between the end of regulation and the start of overtime, tempers got a little bit hot. And Draymond was jawing at Durant. Durant was responding. Teammates were intervening. DeMarcus Cousins, of all people, was one of the peacemakers in this whole thing. But some things were said. Golden State goes on to lose. They go back to the locker room, and then it really escalates. And apparently they're going at it, not physically, but verbally. And Golden State ends up deciding to suspend Draymond Green for one game without pay. So he loses about $120,000 for this. And, you know, now they're trying to pick up the pieces and put the team chemistry back together. So with that as the general description, my job now is to say why I would take Kevin Durant's side on this.
Yep.
I think just because it seems that Draymond went overboard. I mean, it's fine to have a disagreement about the play and to get heated about it, but apparently he, you know, said some things that were, you know, really kind of using language you just don't use with a teammate. And
maybe you don't.
So I think he went over the line. And so that's why I would take Durant's side.
I don't know. It's the difficulty that I have. Like, I like Draymond as a player. And it's funny because the things that I like about Draymond are the things that I don't like about, like, a Grayson Allen. But to me, Draymond has done really well the last couple of years to kind of get his house in order. Like, there's been a lot less Draymond drama than there was in years past with him kicking and doing things that he wasn't supposed to do. and then the sports talk radio starts to get all a buzz over, is that a natural move? Yeah, the same thing happens with Grayson Allen, although we haven't really heard much from him in Utah.
It's because he's just not getting many minutes.
He's not getting many minutes, but he really shouldn't be anyway.
I did see a stat line the other day where he played something like 12 minutes and got 5 fouls. And maybe 5 points.
That's BMBL material right there if I've ever seen it.
He's getting his money's
next
worth.
First round pick. But I like Draymond. He plays hard. I think sometimes things that are said in the heat of the moment can be interpreted the wrong way. Particularly, I mean, these are guys that want to win. They want to play hard. Draymond is a known competitor. He's also known for kind of flying off the handle and then sort of riding the ship a little bit. Like, he knows what's wrong and he knows what's right. Sometimes, hey, we all do it. You get into the red and you say something you shouldn't. All right, well, I screwed up. Now I have to walk it back. So I like what he brings to the team. I am challenged by what happened in the game the other day, but I also feel like there may be some other machinations going on with the whole KD's not going to be with us after the season thing. And I think that's probably the greater issue is they feel to a degree like he's kind of going behind their backs. I mean, everybody knows that KD's going to want to sign somewhere and be the centerpiece of his own thing. Like, he's won championships here. Now he's going to try to do his own thing somewhere else, because otherwise everybody's always going to put an asterisk next to his championships that he couldn't win them without Steph and he couldn't win them without Draymond. Okay, he's going to want to do his own thing. We all know that. But I think his teammates kind of look at it and say, well, you need to be all in with us. We're a team. We're together. And for some reason, I think KD is almost removed from that whole equation as far as that core group that's there, the Klay, the Draymond, the Steph Curry.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic because he joined late and they'd already won a championship without him. And so you're taking it as a done deal that he's out of town, and you know he has not committed or revealed what his plans are. Perhaps they've been up in the air to some degree, but interesting what happened on Twitter after that event was people watched the replay, and it seemed from lip reading that Durant said, "That's why I'm out." And he hasn't come out and said otherwise. But I see the advantage to him if he does decide to leave, to going somewhere else to, you know, to show that he can do it somewhere other than Golden State. But the thing you have to remember is he can't just go to Orlando where they don't have other multiple all-star quality players and win a championship.
Correct.
So I think that gets overblown a little bit. I mean, nobody can go win it by themselves. You know, LeBron had a much lesser supporting cast in Cleveland when he won. But, I mean, he had Kyrie. He had Kevin Love. So it's not like any of these guys can do it by themselves. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for Durant to stay, because if he can keep piling up the championships, get 4, 5, 6 rings, you know, it turns into a potentially slightly different debate with the Durant versus LeBron legacy.
Right. And nobody ever really looks at those Celtics teams from the 60s and says, well, Bill Russell won all those championships with a full stacked supporting cast.
Guys who are Hall of Famers on the bench.
Right. I mean, yeah, nobody ever looks at it like that. People look at it and say, that was just a great team. So, I mean, there's this almost rush now to not look at the long game, where, I mean, think about the Lakers of the early 80s. You have Magic, Kareem, James Worthy. I mean, that was a big three before a big three. And you look at the Celtics and you had Dennis Johnson and Parrish and McHale and Larry Bird. Like, those were stacked teams. But at this point, nobody looks at those teams and says, oh, yeah, Larry Bird was lesser because he was playing with McHale and Parrish and Johnson. Nobody looks at Michael Jordan and says Jordan was lesser because he was playing with Pippen. Like,
and Rodman and Kukoc.
Those were, you tend to forget that stuff. Like, we get caught up in it now because we all want to look at now. We, like, the guy retires and we're immediately evaluating his career. Where does he stand up? Well, sometimes there needs to be a little bit of room given to the end of a career before you say, okay, KD did this or didn't do that. And I think in a lot of cases with these athletes, they're almost looking at it like their legacy is something that is being written the day they retire instead of 10 years or 20 years down the road.
That is how it happens these days.
Yeah.
The other funny thing about that play that I want to get back to is,
yeah,
I actually was fine with Draymond's decision, because if you look at the replay, by the time he got to half court, there were only about 3 seconds left. So the only option was, if he kicks it back to Durant, Durant's going to have to quickly come up and pull up and shoot a 35 or 40 footer.
Yep.
So, you know, it's terrible that Draymond didn't get a shot off, but because of where the clock was at, he didn't have much of an option. So I don't have a problem with the way that he went through the play. But again, I think he was a little bit overboard. And then he came out, in there. What they did last night was kind of showing the chink in the armor and what Steve Kerr is talking about with the spirit, because they go down to Houston and lose by about 20.
Yep.
And just put up a dud. Draymond and Durant were spotted shooting around together, talking. It seems like they're making up to some degree. Draymond came out and, you know, owned up to it a little bit, but they've really got some work to do with their chemistry. And I think chemistry in basketball is probably more important than any other sport, because you've got five guys out there with 100 possessions or so offensively and defensively, only one ball. Everybody's really just out in the open. And you've got 82 games, so it's different than football. But that's the only thing that's going to derail Golden State is chemistry or injury. And funny to see how, with Steph Curry out injured and home, they get him down to Houston so he can be around the team and start to mend things up a little bit.
Yeah, well, and you have to figure too, he probably also wanted to get out of the house a little here and there. They're going to be in an interesting spot come January, February, when you look at that team and you say, okay, it's like Steph's back. He's back at full strength, and he doesn't have the bumps and bruises. Like, they're not going to not make the playoffs. What are they, 12-4 right now?
12-4, and they've also got that other guy, DeMarcus Cousins, on the bench, waiting
to come back. So, I mean, they're in good shape. The thinking about the West Coast now, because we were already there anyway, we'll go south to L.A. LeBron dropped in 44 the other night, and the Lakers all of a sudden are looking okay, which they've won 6 of 7. They've won their last four as of now, which is Friday. And LeBron dropped in 44 the other night and is now moved into what, fifth place past Wilt.
He had an incredible game to move into fifth all time in scoring.
Yeah, he was
44 points,
one assist short of a triple double.
Yeah, 44 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 blocks, and 5 3 pointers. I heard that's the first time that's ever been done. That stat line. And it, you know, you think of it initially as, oh, you know, he's one assist away from another triple double, and no big deal. But then when you throw in those other numbers, it's just, wow, he just keeps doing things that nobody has done before.
I mean, you might say no big deal, but it takes me half a season in the Bedford Men's Basketball League to accumulate a cumulative triple double.
Right.
So, I mean, no big deal to you, big deal to me. He's playing well. I think the injury to Rajon Rondo will be a little bit of addition by subtraction. Get Lonzo Ball a chance to play a little bit more, not a bad thing. But LeBron, yeah, it's always funny when they throw out those stats like, oh, that's the first time in NBA history that's ever happened. And I get that's the first time and they can corroborate that and look at the statistics. But we're now getting into obscure stuff like, oh, he's the first guy to score more than 25 points and have more than 12 rebounds and 3 blocks in 7 consecutive. Like, really?
But the thing about this particular one is it shows his all-around dominance.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Because there's only so many guys who would even have the capability to block 3 shots, hit 5 3-pointers,
oh, yeah,
and get a triple-double.
Yeah. It's impressive to see. You know what's really funny is, did you watch any of that basketball, The Love Story?
Or not enough of it.
I've watched some of it. It's good, and I enjoyed it. The one that I watched more of than anything else was LeBron, and going back to his days in Akron and realizing what a story he is. And you look at him when he was in high school, and I don't remember who it was, Howard Garfinkel maybe, I think he's an Adidas guy. They were running a camp, and LeBron was dominating the 15-year-olds. And Garfinkel goes up to him and says, hey, we want to move you up. We want to move you to a different group. And LeBron said, no, I'm with my friends. I want to be with my friends. And Garfinkel's like, most kids, if you gave them the opportunity to play with that different group, would have jumped all over it. And here's LeBron saying, I want to be with my buddies. I'm enjoying this. And they kind of use that as testament to, this is a guy who really loves and is dedicated to the game. And I see it on the Facebooks where everybody loves to talk a ton of trash about LeBron, but you look at him and look at his arc of his career and how he has handled himself, with one notable exception when he took his talents to South Beach. But with everything else about LeBron in his entire career, and when you see him on that, for all intents and purposes, the Mount Rushmore of the NBA, where it's Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem, Karl Malone, Michael Jordan, when you see him among that group, you kind of go, well, this is a kid who, when he was 17 years old, they were calling him King James, and he actually fulfilled the potential.
Yeah, he really did.
It just blows my mind. And that's not easy.
He really does seem like he's loyal to the people around him, and he's always been that way with his teammates. You don't see him calling out his teammates.
Well, I mean, the first thing you talked about when he scored 44 in the postgame was Akron.
Right.
Like, I'm thinking about my time back in Akron. Like, either he's, and you have to believe, because actions speak louder than words, what he has done with the schools out there, and his dedication to the kids in Akron and giving them an opportunity for a better life. You have to believe that this is, with some people, you'd say this is completely disingenuous and it's a PR job and he's just doing this so Cleveland doesn't hate him. Cleveland's not going to hate him. He won them a championship. Yeah, and this is a place, obviously, that he really does care about, that he looks at as, this shaped me and now it's still important to me.
Yeah, I think some people probably get distracted a little bit by the decision and they lose sight of all the amazing things he's done for various communities, you know, Akron being at the top of that list. But you mentioned the Mount Rushmore of basketball, and I sent you the visual of the top six scorers.
And I forgot one when I mentioned it.
You did, but yeah, it's okay. You forgot Kobe. That's fine. Yeah. You don't have to mention him. But of that...
Four of the six were Lakers.
Five of the six.
LeBron. Holy cow. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Because Karl Malone...
The only one who wasn't was MJ.
That's right. Of the top six scorers, five of them were Lakers at some point.
Yeah.
And then there's MJ.
Yeah.
So really interesting. And speaking of Akron, it made me wonder what he thought about when he was a kid. Because you look up to the greats and then maybe you associate with a particular franchise. Obviously, for us here in New England, it was Larry Bird and the Celtics. But he was established in 1984, if you take a gander at his tattoos.
Yeah.
So he wasn't alive for the Magic Larry era.
Right.
When he was probably starting to watch a fair amount of basketball in the early 90s, it was MJ.
Yeah, well, MJ and the Rockets.
MJ and the Rockets and then Kobe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just wonder, you know, when he had his dreams as a kid, did he have a particular team in mind where he would want to go? And maybe it was just Cleveland and, you know, the dreams came true that he won the championship there. But, you know, it got me thinking about this most recent decision when he decided to go to LA.
Yep.
And Magic is out there. And obviously there's the lure of Hollywood, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
But isn't it fascinating that on this list, the five guys ahead of him before this last game against Portland when he passed Wilt Chamberlain, of those five guys, four of them were Lakers.
Yeah.
And so as he journeys towards the ultimate Mount Rushmore, he's going to become the all-time NBA scoring leader if he stays healthy. He's going to pass all those guys in LA while he's there.
Yeah.
And it's going to be pretty fascinating to have that play out.
Well, I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Kareem passed Wilt.
Wow, you're old.
Yeah, because I used to watch the Lakers on, it was KCAL. It was KHJ before that, Channel 9. But I used to watch those games. And I remember when it happened and what a big deal that it was. And so Kareem, it's funny though, that list, I think of Kareem as a Laker. Although you can make the case a Buck, but I mean, he did most of his work as a Laker. Kobe obviously is nothing but a Laker. If LeBron to me is always a Cav,
right?
It's one of those things that's got to stick. Karl Malone's a Utah Jazz,
right?
I don't even know if
Wilt.
Yeah, Wilt to me, Wilt. That's a later career thing. That's almost like LeBron thing. He's a Sixer.
Yeah, he's more split than the other
warrior,
guys.
Or a warrior, as it were, back then. But, you know, Wilt really is more of a split. But, yeah, you look at that group, It's just, it's crazy to watch those guys. And it's crazy when you think about LeBron and how he has morphed as a player and really matured as a player. And I think about Karl Malone in that brief time. I think it was like right around 99, 2000 when they brought him to the Lakers. And it really appeared like a foregone conclusion. They were taking these end of career guys and trying to build the Kobe Shaq team with Gary Payton and Mitch Richmond and Karl Malone. Karl Malone used to work out at the gym where we worked out.
Oh, yeah.
The cheap 24-hour fitness that was like $11 a month.
Huh.
And, but seeing that dude on the bench, first of all, he was a beast.
Oh, man.
Like, strong as an ox. But seeing Karl Malone sitting on a bench press where, like, it's built for humans that are my size.
Right.
And so, like, I sit there and my legs are perpendicular, like, my thighs are perpendicular to the ground and I fit. Karl Malone would sit there on this thing and he's got this huge angle because his lower leg, he's just so big. Like 6'10", dude, sitting there using a bench press.
He probably made the bench look like a bicycle
seat.
It
was a joke, but yeah, no. So we would get some interesting people in there. We'd get him. We'd get Sean Elliott, Jennifer Capriati, just random, like, and some of their agents worked. So it was in this place near where I grew up. There was a shopping mall in the middle and a bunch of office buildings on the outside, and the office buildings, some of the agents were in there. So like Lee Steinberg was in one of them. I don't know who he was representing at that point in time, but that was, I think, in fact, they might've filmed some of the Jerry Maguire scenes from there when you can see the ocean. Yeah. But anyway, random sidebar. Have you seen, this was on ESPN too, your boy Boban and Tobias Harris with their little show?
I haven't. I heard something about it, but I haven't seen it.
It's funny. It's fun. They finish each other's sentences.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. They're like, yeah. It's Tobias Harris was talking about his girlfriend liking Boban more than she
Tobias?
Likes him. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Boban, I just love that guy.
Yeah.
We've talked about him a few times. If you haven't seen him, you got to make it a point. And unfortunately, in the last couple of games, he hasn't gotten any playing time. But he started a few games, and he's just, per minute, he is the most dominant force in the NBA. He'll play 12 minutes and get a double-double with three blocks. And it's just so fun to see him out on the court. And he obviously has a great sense of humor as well. But to close the loop on LeBron,
yes,
in this chase for Kareem, just going over the numbers again, it looks like he'll pass Michael Jordan this year to go into fourth.
They said January-ish.
Yep.
Yeah, barring injury, of course.
He'll pass Kobe early next season at the latest to go into third. And then if he plays four more years after this one and just averages 25 a game, plays 70.
Just.
Yeah.
Okay.
70 games a year, then he'll do it in the 2022-2023 season when he turns 38.
Yep.
So after this year, four more full seasons, and he'll be number one on the list. And by the way, I didn't get to actually run the numbers, but I heard that with his assist totals at around that same time, he's going to be third all time in assists as well. Pretty incredible.
Yeah. It's crazy to see. Do you think, and this is more of an NBA related question, because the NBA has also made some changes to rules that I think are that favor the fan. One rule is that offensive rebound, you don't get a full reset of the 24. You get, what, 14 now?
This year it's now 14 seconds.
Yeah, which is a phenomenal rule. Forces the ball to go back up in the air a little bit quicker. Quicker possessions. You get less of those minute and a half possessions that are, you know, a couple offensive rebounds really can do a game in. Have you, because you watch far more NBA than I do, as a fan, as a more casual fan than you are, that to me is a huge win for the fans. More offense.
Yes, it is. The scoring is up dramatically. That's one piece of it. And it does make it more exciting because, as you said, get the offensive rebound late in the game. You don't get to run out the clock as much. It gives the team that's trailing more of a chance to get right back in the game. And it does speed up the action in the last minute, which is good as well. But the the changes to the rules on what is a foul, you know, players have a lot more freedom of movement now, and it's what has resulted in the increase in scoring. So as you look ahead to legacies, you know, it'll just be that much more impressive that LeBron was putting up these numbers before this takes off, because
right.
it seems that as we move forward for the next couple decades, scoring is going to continue to be up. Adam Silver obviously likes that. He values the offense and the fans' appreciation of the game, because you look back at the 90s when it was, you know, 92 to 86 every night with just this boxing match in the paint.
Yeah.
With, you know, the Knicks as the prime example.
And Pistons, yeah.
It just wasn't as, it's just not as fun to watch with all the hand checking and how physical the game was. It was just harder to move and score. So it's going to be easier to score, but more fun to watch for the fan.
Right. So more possessions per 48 minutes, more fan-friendly game. And then now the Celtics have a foil in the Sixers,
yes,
with Jimmy Buckets going there. And it seems like, I don't know, it seems like Philly won that trade.
I think they did. And it's a game, it's a potential game changer for Philly. I mean, they were not off to a great start, and it seemed that their momentum from last year hadn't really taken the next step as they wanted. And it seemed like you sort of out of nowhere that they're the ones who won the Jimmy Butler sweepstakes. And you just didn't hear about them. You heard about Houston offering the 4 first-round draft picks. You heard about how Jimmy Butler had interest in going to the Clippers or the Knicks. But then all of a sudden, Elton Brand pulls the right strings and works the deal with Minnesota. And part of the analysis for Minnesota was they wanted him out of the Western Conference. And, you know, we'll see if that matters much, because Minnesota's going to have to take a big step and come up with something else if they're going to, you know, challenge for a trip to the finals. But I do agree that Philly won the trade, because in addition to Jimmy Butler, they get this young guy, Justin Patton, who's really good shooter for a big guy. And he's the perfect backup to Embiid. And I think that's getting overlooked a little bit. But, you know, the one thing that Minnesota did get was 2 good rotation players in Robert Covington and Dario Saric. And if they'd done the deal with Houston with 4 draft picks and maybe 1 player, then they wouldn't have those guys in the building. And it seemed like Minnesota valued that. So they do get 2 good players, and Minnesota is definitely still a playoff team. But now all of a sudden, Philly has what they're missing is a guy who can get his own shot and score in the clutch, and he can hit 3-pointers. They've sorely been missing outside shooting with guys like Simmons on the court who won't even take a 3. So, you know, they are much more of a contender in terms of, you know, threats to Boston. Toronto's off to a great start. So far, the way things have been shaping up, not quite as good as the Celtics fans would have hoped for, who would have smartly predicted, you know, a runaway number one seed. But Toronto and Philly have something to say about that.
Yeah, the other thing that's weird, I guess, as it pertains to Philly, is what does this mean for Markelle Fultz, who's been in the league for a year and just kind of went from a can't-miss sure thing to what is absolutely wrong with this guy?
It's sad. It's obviously psychological. I heard on NBA radio that there's going to be a story coming out maybe today or tomorrow that's going to explain whatever it is that's been haunting him such psychologically. So stay tuned for that. That apparently is going to come out. But he had a split with his shooting coach.
Yep.
Recently. And you got to feel for him, because he's obviously dealing with something. I don't think they've handled it very well, to be honest, because towards the end of the regular season, he had a triple-double in one of the regular season games where they actually gave him a bunch of minutes. And then they buried him on the bench in the playoffs. And then this year, they've started him in the first half, but he's come off the bench in the second half. I mean, there's nothing more damaging to a guy's confidence than this type of arrangement where you're half a starter, but then you're not, and we're not going to play you in the playoffs, even though you just got a triple-double.
Right.
I mean, I think back to my playing days in baseball, the best thing that I think ever happened to me was my college coach saying, you're the number three hitter. Starting my junior year, you know, up to that point, it was, you know, am I going to play? How many at-bats am I going to get? I mean, there's nothing more comforting psychologically than your coach saying, we believe in you to fill this role, whatever it is.
Right. Well, in that piece of communication that you have when you're a coach, regardless of the sport, when you're a coach and you say, this is what I'm going to do with you, this is what I need you for, regardless of age too, now you're mentally prepared for a situation. And who knows whether they've had conversations with Fultz about it, but that's why it's really a challenge when you're coaching to communicate openly with your team. And if you don't do that, you can have adults who are at a point where you need them and they're not ready for you because they haven't mentally prepared. And sometimes too, there's also a maturity component that goes along with it, where if somebody hasn't mentally prepared them, they want to say, yes, coach. I want to say, yes, this is a situation that I'm comfortable in, even if it's not one that I'm comfortable in. And it's on both sides. It's on the coach saying, this is the role I want you to play. And it's also on the side of the player saying, that's not a role that I'm comfortable in. What else can I do?
It's so critical. And the thing with Fultz is they seem to communicate through the media about it, but there wasn't any clarity. It was obvious that it was an experiment, okay? We're not quite sure if we want him to be a starter. So what we're going to do is we're going to start him in the first half, come off the bench in the second. And by announcing that, it's almost like they were announcing to the media, we're not sure. And that's just so damaging to him. I mean, it would have been better for him to say just one or the other, either you're starting or you're coming off the bench. I mean, if they had just said, you're coming off the bench, you're our sixth man, you're going to come in with the second unit, lead them, you know, be aggressive, shoot as you know, many times as it makes sense, I think he'd be much better off with that defined role. Like, to your point, if you have that clarity, whether it's starter, sixth man, ninth man, then you can try and thrive in that role. And it's funny to think about what happened down in Houston with Carmelo, because that's the other news of the week in the NBA. They did a much better job attempting to communicate, and it was in the offseason, you know, there was plenty of discussion with him coming in. Is he going to start or not? Because he'd been a starter throughout his career, and everybody's starting to realize that, you know, maybe he's better off as a sixth man so he can play against the second unit. And they tried to work it out. They tried to communicate. D'Antoni has come out and said that Melo did everything they asked for. He was great, but it, you know, the experiment just didn't work out. And so after 10 games on the court, they've decided to part ways.
Do you, because everybody talks about Carmelo Anthony like it's a foregone conclusion that he's a Hall of Famer. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, he is.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't know where he is on the scoring. I think, like, he's top 25 in scoring.
He's top 20 in scoring. I think he's like 18th or 19th. He is one that I struggle with a lot because he's a one-trick pony. Like, he's a great scorer, but he hasn't been a winner. And he's been, like, unfortunately for him, I think he would have been a great Pippen to somebody's Jordan. But he's not the Jordan. And he's not the Karl Malone. And he's, like, I can't. He would be in the Hall of Very Good.
Well, that's the thing. The NBA Hall of Fame can sometimes trend towards the Hall of Very Good. You know, it's a little bit more inclusive than some other groups. And I mean, he's not in the upper echelon of Hall of Fame NBA players, but he'll make it because of the point totals. He has been, you know, he has been memorable and unique in how he has scored, you know, because he's been a clutch scorer in the regular season and dominant from the mid-range. So in that era where that was valued more, he was one of the best. And it's been definitely disappointing to see what he's failed to do in the playoffs. But he also can throw in there that he has 3 gold medals with Team USA. So I think he certainly has enough. He will go in, but his career is not complete from my perspective because of the failures in the playoffs.
Where does he go now?
The most recent article I read was a discussion about how does he fit in Philly of all places, and that's one place that could make sense. He could be on the second unit with Fultz, come in as a scorer. So that's a possibility. But in terms of other random teams, I heard some talk about a place like Memphis, where they're really great defensively. So his defensive weaknesses wouldn't show up as much. And they've had a surprising season so far. They're actually doing well. And that's one thing they're missing, is a little bit more scoring. So someplace like that he could fit. Or then, you know, of course, you hear more talk about maybe he goes back to Miami or L.A. to play with Wade or LeBron. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, he's one that I've always liked, except when he was beating KU in the finals.
Right.
But I've always liked him. I've always, like, you want him to have that. I guess he had his one shining moment.
He did.
That year.
He was in college.
That was in college. Yeah. But anyway. So I guess we're just going to roll right through because we only have like 3 minutes left. So,
wow. Yeah,
time flies when you're having fun. So baseball, Mookie Betts.
Hot stove report number two.
Hot stove report number two. Mookie Betts, that was a foregone conclusion.
What a season.
AL MVP. 30-30
club.
No-brainer.
And he missed 26 games.
Yeah, no-brainer. That was an easy one. Would have bet the farm on that one. Christian Yelich on the NL. I can't really think of anybody else that should have gotten it.
No, they said Javi Baez was second.
Yeah.
And he was 30-20.
Yep.
But Yelich...
Yelich, what, 32 homers, drove in 100-something and 110-plus, scored 110-plus, like, and he hit 326. Like, I can't argue with Christian Yelich. My favorite stat of the day, you ready for it? I thought of this while I was going to the bus stop this morning.
Good, because I've got mine, too.
It
What's
would
yours?
Take Jacob DeGrom 51 years, like last year, to get within one of Cy Young's career win total.
That's
but
right.
He still got the Cy Young Award.
To get from 10 to 5-12?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, Cy Young Award with 10 wins, but his ERA was under 2.
He had a great season. And, like, that's the real difference between the Cy Young Award and the MVP. Cy Young Award is the best pitcher in the league. That's it. MVP is what impact did you have on your team?
Yeah, so Yelich's stat was... After the All-Star break this year, he hit 367, 25 home runs, 67 RBIs in only 65 games. And he also had two cycles in the second half. So he was just incredible down the stretch. But back to DeGrom, the stat for him, the other stat for him, in addition to him having 10 wins, was he had the worst run support in Major League Baseball, 3.5 runs a game.
It's just astonishing. Like in you see the dudes on ESPN. Michael Wilbon is the one that I'm thinking of most acutely, who get mad because the guy doesn't win games, but he's not losing. He had
it's not his fault.
He had a historic season. He had 24 quality starts in a row. Like that's when I saw an interview with him yesterday morning, and I think anybody who questions whether he deserves it has never actually pitched before, because the hardest thing about pitching, absolutely bar none, is getting into a jam and getting out of a jam and limiting the damage. And so you get a couple guys on and somebody hits what should be an easy double play grounder and your shortstop kicks it and you go, here we go again. And there's nobody outs and the bases are loaded. How do I get out of the inning with as little damage as I possibly can? And that was the real difference with DeGrom from last year to this year, was he really didn't give up any crooked numbers. Like, he gets into trouble and he gets out of trouble. And we talked about this during the playoffs, like the momentum that goes along with your starter has gotten himself out of trouble. This is amazing. He just was on a really garbage team.
And it almost makes it that much more impressive, because day after day, he was just getting one run, two run, three runs, and he's having to deal with that mentally. Not only he keeps getting out of the jam for the team, but they keep failing him, and they don't score any runs, so he doesn't get the win, even though he had pitched quite well. So just a fantastic season to do that for a team that was so bad, to have it, those historic numbers, the first pitcher in the 2000s to have an ERA under two. Just incredible.
It's crazy. So here are your fun Cy Young facts. Cy Young finished 83% of the games he started, and Cy Young got a decision in 91% of the games he pitched in.
Different era.
Astonishing. So, yes. With that in mind, we're going to conclude our show for the week. Thank you to our we didn't have any guests. thank you to the crew here at Bedford 105.1 for actually letting us in the studio again. Harry Kozlowski, Chris Gentry, Bill Jennings, and Colleen Richardson. Good luck to all the Bulldogs playing football this weekend, whether it's the varsity or the 10U team. And we'll report back next week with some of the highlights. And by the way, if you're listening Saturday morning, tune in tonight at 6, and you can catch the game live from Wildcat Stadium. So enjoy your sports week. This is Bedford 105.1.